Today's episode is an absolute banger. We are going to be talking about how do you give constructive feedback to your boss? How do you handle energy drainers at work, which is seriously one of my favorite topics? And how do you tell your current employer you're looking for other work? I'm joined by Emily Douglas, who is an organizational psychologist, and she's also going to share her input into this conversation. Before we get into it, though, I want to shout out to our show partner for today. This episode is proudly brought to you by My Training. We invite you to download today's worksheet and resource guide. Make sure you check them out. Let's get into it. This is a podcast about making work work. You'll learn about leadership, career growth, and how to navigate those weird work challenges. I run a HR consulting business called Boldside, where I help leaders build epic team cultures. If you lead a team or run a business and you think I can help, let's connect on LinkedIn. My name is Shelley Johnson, and this is Work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Emily Douglas, welcome back to the pod.
No worries. Glad to be back. It's great.
We're doing a listener Q&A. We've done some big episodes so far, some deep topics. We've got a bunch of questions that have been sent through. I'm going to start with Medis. He's asked, how do I give constructive feedback to my boss? They are fairly new in the role and trying to establish themselves, and I think my feedback would help, but it's also a bit awkward and I don't want to get them offside.
Yeah, good question, Medi. And I suppose often we do see those opportunities where we think we can help a supervisor and we want to give advice and we're doing it because we want to help them, right? But it's whether or not they're open to that level of feedback. And I guess that's why Medi's made that remark that it can be awkward. So I think a good way to approach is to let the person know that what they're doing well. So you want to put them in that positive frame of mind that you're not being critical, but just letting them know, hey, look, it's great that you've taken on that new role. We're seeing these things are doing really well. And I've also got a bit of a feedback for you if you're willing to hear it. So asking for permission to give that feedback. And I guess you have to be prepared for them to say no as well in asking that question. Hopefully, maybe not at the time, but maybe they just recognise, you know, later that afternoon or the next day, actually this is somewhere I can learn. And I think the second part as well for wanting to give feedback to a supervisor is then being willing to receive feedback yourself, so that it opens up this conversation around two people being a little bit vulnerable with each other and building some trust. So it can't be a one-way street. As much as you go, hang on, I'm doing a great job, you've got to open yourself up for feedback, build that vulnerability and trust. So, yeah, hopefully that's helped there.
One of the funny things that we see in my business, one of our most popular workshops we run with teams is a Tough Conversations Masterclass. And essentially it's how do you give feedback? And it gets asked for all the time. And I find this really interesting because I'm like, so many people want to learn how to give feedback, but not many people are asking for help of how to receive it. And I think in order to be a great giver of feedback, you actually have to be a really good receiver of feedback. And so I think your point for Medi is frame the conversation up really well, ask for permission, be kind and like honest and truthful in how you give feedback, but also be prepared to receive it. And if we can start from that place, I think it really changes how we interact with people when we're having these difficult conversations.
Oh, for sure. And I guess I've been binging a little bit lately on, firstly, Adam Grant, who was out in Australia a few weeks ago. Didn't get to go see him, but got to watch a recording of it afterwards. And so one of the questions he had in there, and he's really encouraging of, is getting someone to give him feedback. So live in the interview, he asked the person doing the Q&A, okay, rate me out of today's performance. You know, and they gave him a 9 out of 10 or something like that because he's brilliant. And he's like, well, what could I have done to get to the 10? So he was trying to demonstrate what he's talking about of being a little bit vulnerable. And it wasn't just telling me what I'm doing wrong. is also tell me how I can improve. What would have made it better? So I think that maybe even can add to Mehdi's question is that, you know, you start with what they're doing well, what they could do that would make it even better, but how, some practical things. Now, you might not have all the answers, but you could sort of suggest, if it's to your supervisor, I'm willing to work with you and get some suggestions and look at how we could achieve it together, just to build up that level of trust.
And I heard from someone else who went and saw Adam Grant, and I can't remember who it was, that he said instead of trying to give feedback, give advice, like ask for advice. Like, so a manager, when we managers ask for feedback, often employees don't give feedback because it's a really hard thing to do when there's a power differential. So they're like, nah, we're all good here, even though they've probably got a long list of things. They're like, you could do this heaps better.
Yep,
so instead, like if a manager says to an employee, hey, I'd love you to give me some advice on how I'm running one-on-ones, that can be a totally different way to elicit feedback because people love giving advice and don't like giving feedback as much. But I think the other angle with this, Mehdi, because you're the one giving your boss feedback, could be really focus on the future. So don't dig too much into the past of in last week's meeting, this really sucked and this could have been different. Like, because that can be hard when you're trying to give feedback upwards, but focus on the future and it's probably an easier conversation to have. Now, I'm not saying shy away from reflection, but I am saying, hey, if you frame it up in this way of going, hey, boss, I'd really love to think about how we do one-on-ones moving forward. I've had a couple of ideas. I think we could change them in this way. And maybe instead of doing hourly, monthly one-on-ones, we could do fortnightly, half an hour one-on-ones so we could have more frequent check-ins because I think we need more conversation through the week. So instead of focusing on the past and what went wrong, you're focusing on what could we do differently in future and how that might improve things.
Oh, totally. I really agree with you there, Cheryl. It's, yeah, sometimes you might want to use an example from the past, but it's not really dwelling on that because then people can get defensive or they talk about, well, I had to do that at that time because of X, Y, and Z, but it's more, yeah, look to the future. What can make it better? How can we just keep on looking for those? And sometimes it's just small improvements that have a big impact. And particularly when you're looking at someone who's new into a role, new into a particular tier of leadership, they might be feeling a little bit vulnerable of, am I doing a good enough job? And it's, and that's why you've really got to gauge, yeah, how open are they to the feedback, or are they feeling the pressure to perform? And where's that pressure coming from? Is it upper management or is it just them? So if it's just them and you can help them out, hopefully they take that on board. It's getting okay with receiving feedback, which not all of us are, but we can strive to get better in that space.
Yeah, you're so right, like working out where that pressure comes from. And the other thing I reckon we could do when we're giving feedback upwards and you feel nervous. So I'm putting myself in Mehdi's position where he's like, this manager may not be very vulnerable because they're trying to kind of establish themselves. And sometimes when we're new, we project this image where we're like, got it all together instead of actually just being honest and going, ah, I'm just figuring this thing out. So Mehdi, I would encourage you, try to pinpoint the common goal that you have with your manager because you'll have a shared goal. Like, that person wants to do a good job. Like, I've never met someone who's jumped into leadership that didn't want to do a good job. Like, I just don't think there's many of those people out there. And if
why jump up there if you're not doing it to strive to be good at it? So, yeah.
So call out what that common goal is. And I think you can also speak to the intent. So the way I would frame it is I would jump in and say to your boss, hey, I know like that early part of managing and getting to know a team can be really hard. And I really love how you're trying to help this team succeed. And I can see that you want this team to do really well. And I've got some ideas of how maybe we could do this that will set the whole team up for a win. Do you reckon we could have a conversation about that? And it's just, it just changes the tone. Like if you spell out your intent when you're delivering feedback, I think it changes the tone of that conversation.
It's all in the setup, right? Well, I think that's what we're both saying here. You've got to frame it in the right way. And even just to add a little nuance to what you just said there is that you could even frame it around saying, as a team, we want you to succeed. So we want to be able to help you. And here's some ways that is going to better engage us so that we can do that.
Yes, I love that. That is such a beautiful way to frame it. And it lowers that person's defensiveness.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not picking on you. We just We want you to succeed so that we can succeed.
That's amazing. Everyone, make sure you've written that down, because I think that's good for any time you have to give your boss feedback. And I know there can be a lot of nerves and apprehension around this type of conversation, but I think what you've just said of I want you to succeed and our whole team wants you to succeed is just a really non-threatening way to start this conversation. Okay, so the next question, Em, is from Daniel. Would you tell your current employer you were looking for other employment? And I think the context was someone in the Facebook community, the This Is Money Facebook community, had raised a question that they were looking to get pregnant and they were working in a small business that didn't do parental leave or paid parental leave. Mm. And they weren't sure, should they raise that eventually they're going to look for another job, or how should they handle it? So there's a little bit of like nuance to this question. I'd love to kind of chat this through, because I think there's no like one size fits all response.
Yeah, look, I think it's a tricky space, and we're getting better at how do we look at people needing to take that time out from their careers for maternity leave, and also looking from the male side of as well, of paternal leave. But I guess this question's coming from that point of view of someone who's working in a business where, yes, yeah, small business is really hard for them to provide maternity leave. So in this situation, there's a real genuine reason there to say, hey, look, I'm looking for other work. It's not that I don't enjoy working here. It's just that I do need to have a look at that bigger picture for myself, for my family, and making sure that we're financially secure through this time. So I am weighing up my options, because you also don't want to shut down the ongoing work that you're doing where you are employed, because you might find by going through and exploring other work, and I guess the reason you tell your employer is you might be popping them down for a reference and you want to keep them on side in that process, is that you could go through and explore alternatives and find that there isn't actually anything better out there, or you've come up with a new idea of how do you manage the family finances through that period. So you really don't want to get an employer offside by not letting them know. But again, I like you said, Shelley, it is a bit nuanced, because some organisations are really open to have this chat. And I've heard someone before, can't even think what company it was, but it was a CEO sort of saying, he goes, look, when someone comes and tells me they're looking for other work, I'm so happy for them. I'm so pleased. And I let them know that I'm, you know, really glad that they've found another opportunity and we've helped them grow in their career to that point. I don't think every person is like that, because if you lose a staff member and you're a small business, that's really hard. You've got such a tight dynamic when you've got a small team. The shift of one person has a greater impact than when you're with a larger organisation. But I guess for Daniel's question, and that he's putting that forward based on some other conversations, is that I think you can again frame that up in a way that isn't just, hey, I'm leaving, but it's because you know, the size of the business doesn't allow for you to offer maternity leave. I'm going to look at other options just to see that bigger picture for myself. But I think also if you are looking for other work, there should be a way where we can have that conversation and let people know maybe that we're seeking other opportunities for what those reasons are around our own career growth. And again, it's about this feedback cycle of, you know, wanting the best from each other. And it could generate a whole other conversation, right, of an employer going, actually, we can make some adjustments, some accommodations, and find some middle ground, because that's also a possibility that in either looking for career growth or looking for maternity reasons that you want to leave somewhere, that you can then find solutions that you didn't even think were possible beforehand that were closed off. So it starts to become, yeah, a bigger chat.
Someone put in response to one of these questions that got sent in the Facebook community, you should never, ever tell an employer you are looking for other work or you're considering other options. You should only tell them when you've signed the contract and it's all locked in. And I was like, to that person, I fundamentally disagree with you. Like, I disagree with you on every single level. Like, if you put yourself in, and this is seriously, I'm just going to be really blunt. If you put yourself in a manager's position or a small business owner's position or anyone, I just want you to think for a sec. I'm just going to be really blunt, and I don't do this that often. I think I'm quite balanced. I run a small business, but I've also run large HR teams in large businesses. And employees who have the conversation before, I always feel way more favourable towards than when an employee drops a bomb on me that they're leaving. Like, I was talking to a small business owner recently who had someone leave that had been there long term, and didn't tell them anything until they like submitted the resignation via email, no conversation. And I just think, you know what? That to me, it's like painful. Like, I think if we're going to be mature in our response as an employee, give people, have the conversation, because if the roles were reversed and you've worked with someone for 5 years and the first you're hearing that they're looking for other work is the resignation letter, that is such a blow in my opinion. And it's like actually removes the maturity out of the conversation. And so for me, yes, you're right. There are exceptions to the rule. And there's that beautiful CEO who champions people when they leave. Yep. Amazing. And like, not everyone's like that, 100%. So like, yes, there are times where the first conversation you have is going to be that you're resigning. But I think most healthy organizations, we should have these conversations beforehand to some extent. Now, you don't have to go all in and be like, look, this is what I'm thinking when it's really early days, but have a version of it before you submit your resignation email by like, I don't know, like I just think have some kind of conversation. So this is what I would do. I would, if I was in the person's position who, you know, long-term they're looking for parental leave, first thing is your employer probably knows that. Like they probably have an idea that down the track, maybe you're going to want to start a family. So this is how I'd say it. I'd go, look, I've been thinking about my long-term options. One of my priorities in the next few years would be to start a family. And I'd love to have a conversation with you about what that might look like. I love my role here. I love the work that I'm doing. Is there a possibility down the track that you would consider paid parental leave? Is that off the cards? I know in a small business that can be really difficult. I just want to talk about it and open the conversation in whatever way you feel comfortable. But I guess to the point of the person who responded saying, do not talk about it until you've signed your contract. Now, if you're in a toxic workplace, that probably makes sense.
Yeah.
But if you're in an organization where you have a healthy relationship with your boss, it probably doesn't make sense.
And I agree with you there, Shelley. I think that the key thing is, I guess, a healthy organization. I can understand if it's a toxic organization, you kind of just might drop them out because you haven't felt that you've been treated fairly. And that seems, you know, fair. But I think for the most part, and we're trying to build more and more healthy organizations where these conversations can happen and you can be supported. Because we know that if people, you know, talking about, you know, as a small business owner, if people leave your organization, small or large, to try and fill that position again and train someone up is quite a significant cost, which means that organizations are willing to then work with you and go, okay, I can understand what you're trying to do. And obviously if it's around pregnancy, then that's a long-term proposition where it's not going to happen immediately necessarily. And so you want to have a look at how can we support someone so that they feel that they can go make those life choices and not have to hide their decision. And I guess then be happy to talk about it at work as opposed to hiding their intention. So it sort of has all these flow-ons of people feeling a little bit more comfortable of going, yep, I'm going to try and look to this job in 5 years' time. Like, we don't stay in organisations forever these days. So I think it's about pregnancy, but it's also those other milestones that everyone might have of, yeah, I'm retraining, I'm requalifying, I'm seeking to get a different position in a few years' time. And if you can support them on that journey, then they're going to give a lot to the organisation while they're with you, and you're going to benefit and support them on the next career path, because we all need to have a network of people to help us find the next job that's going to be a good fit. So we want to keep them on side.
I think it goes to the idea that in a good relationship with your boss, you're probably going to be having regular conversations about your long-term career. And so that sets you up to do this really well. So if you're able to start that now, like it's a long game, don't start thinking about it within the 3 months that you start looking for other work. Start thinking about it now before anything's happened. So the way that I would do this is for me with my boss, old boss Deb, when I was working in HR team, and one of the things we did, we always talked about the long term. So talk about this long term view of, you know, in 5 years, I want to maybe be doing this, or I want to be doing this, or this is an area that's really interesting to me. And so the idea for me and her was there was just no surprises. And when it came time for me to leave that organization, she knew that my time was coming to an end. We'd had so many conversations over the, you know, 6 or so years we'd worked together that it just wasn't a shock. And I think about the reverse, one thing that HR people will talk about, and we don't always get this right, so hear me in this, is It's like the principle of no surprises with employees. And there's this goal of, I don't want an employee to ever feel surprised by a difficult conversation. If I'm going to have a performance conversation with an employee, or if I'm going to address an issue, I want there to be no surprises.
Yeah.
If we flip it and we go, if you want to be an amazing employee that gets promoted, that lands all these opportunities, have that same approach with your employer. Now, I want to say there are absolutely the exceptions to this where you don't have that type of manager. Like Deb was like the most amazing manager, and she was the type of person that you could talk about all this stuff with. Not everyone has that person, but if you operate from this idea of like, how do I set this up to be like, I'm not going to blindside my employer with like big news. I'm going to take them on a journey just like I would like to be taken on the journey. So it's just that fundamental, like treat people how you want to be treated. I'll just call out where I think there are exceptions. If your boss is vindictive, so if they're going to hold that against you, and I've seen this happen in a number of instances where it hasn't been safe for people to speak up. So if your boss is vindictive and they're actually going to limit you, if you don't have psychological safety, so if your organization punishes people for speaking up and speaking with truth and honesty, then that's probably not an environment where you can. If there are... if you've observed them treat people badly for being honest in this way in the past. So I know I did my big rant before. This is my balanced view. Like this is me going, okay, where are the exceptions? This would be where you use your discretion, you use your own wisdom and like intuition to work out, okay, she said that. Let's aim for that. If I work in a healthy organization, what are the exceptions to the rule, and then gauge it based on the environment that you're in.
Of course. Yeah. And I guess in one of our previous podcast, we were talking about toxic workplaces, right? So yes, that's definitely the exception of where you wouldn't feel comfortable necessarily speaking up. And yes, there's concerns around vindictiveness. But if we've got a trusting workplace, and possibly you experience this, Shelley, of going from working within a larger organisation to starting up your own, if you maintain that relationship, you might even get referrals from them where they're like, look, this piece of work doesn't suit our setup, but it might suit you. And so you've got those networks because you've treated each other with respect when you've changed that career path. So, yeah, like you, worked in big and small organisations and can see those differing ways these conversations can go. But it's, yeah, if you can make those plans known over a stretch of time, you're going to get more in both directions.
Totally. And you can see just how nuanced this thing is because we've like dug into it in detail, but this is such a big question to answer. So Daniel, and I think it might've been Annie who originally asked the question in the Facebook community, both of you use your own discretion on this, weigh it all up, but I am excited to see how this conversation lands. Keep us in the loop because it's a big one. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we have some really interesting questions on dealing with energy vampires at work. If you want to grow in your career, I just wanted to remind you about our book, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. Glenn James and I have written this book to help you with any kind of career crisis, but also those things that you want, like getting a promotion, making more money, moving into a leadership role, or if it's time to quit your job. You can find our book wherever you get good books from, or you can listen on the audiobook, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. Now let's get back to the show.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
All right, I'm going to go to the energy vampire question because this is a banger. Okay, so this is two questions submitted from two different people. So Belinda said, how do you handle energy vampires and energy drainers at work? And I've got a few of them on my team. And then Annie came in with a similar question on the Facebook community. How do you navigate other people's negativity in the workplace, such as cynicism towards the company itself and general negative comments constantly? What would you say?
Yeah, and look, straight away I'm thinking back to an example where I sort of had to manage this a little bit in my in a previous role I had, and it was looking at the exposure to that individual. And I guess the example I had was someone that was both a boss and a friend. So it was just this extra layer in there where I could manage it in the workplace a little bit, but I'm like, well, it's just too much. And so I looked at my exposure and managed a way to shape my work week where I had one day out of the office. Back when flexible working arrangements was not really all that popular. So I did look at, I need to see this person regularly. We work together very closely. But to do that effectively, I need to manage my energy levels, which means being away from them for periods of time. And that was tricky to negotiate and find a way of framing that with that person to make it look like it was all about getting my work done in an effective way and managing my time with them. But I think for our two questions there of, the cynicism side as well, I think that needs to be acknowledged. But again, it's, is that a comfortable enough conversation, and how do you frame that with that person of just going, look, it is difficult for me to hear a lot of your negativity when we're at work and some of that cynicism, and it's starting to drain me a little bit. So, I do just want to separate some of that time, or maybe if you can think about how often you talk about that so that they get a level of feedback and understand the impact that's having on other people. And I recognise that's something that not everyone's comfortable bringing up, but you also need that person to have a level of insight and understanding, and they might already know and just find it hard to manage if they're not feeling so great in the workplace and feeling a bit cynical themselves. But just letting them know it's having an impact on you, that you can't always be supportive around that because it's not a view you necessarily share. I'm assuming, by the way, you asked that question there, or that came through, that they perhaps don't share the same viewpoint. They don't want to sit there and have a negative spiral conversation with that person and be, join in the cynicism about the work. So letting them know, I don't share that view. So it just means that I can't always be having that chat with you.
And that's kind of like a boundaries conversation, because you have to set those boundaries to maintain your energy.
Mm. Yeah. And I would expect that people asking these sorts of questions are going, well, I can't enjoy my work. I can't do a good job with my work because I've got these people around me that are bringing me down, sapping my own energy. So, setting up some boundaries so that you can focus when you need to. And also, I guess we've spoken about feedback. We all sort of need to know when we're being that energy sapper. Perhaps we're going to have different times in our own careers where we're, a little bit, negative. I think, we maybe are the ones that are bringing that wrong level of energy, and we need someone just to sort of snap us out of it and go, okay, you're right. I am being, a bit down the dumps, and maybe I need to moderate that level of conversation.
I think we all, like you said, sometimes we are around the energy drainer and sometimes we are the energy drainer. And I think there's ways we all contribute to and detract from energy on a team. And I remember working with psychologist. He was on my team and he said this really amazing thing. So he was kind of part of our kind of HR team-ish. He was overseeing risk, but he's super insightful and about people, and as most psychologists are. And he said this amazing thing once to me. There was this person on the team, and I would have called them an oversharer. And I think oversharers can have a tendency to be energy draining. And I say that as an oversharer. So that would be my area to work on. But there was this one person on the team that consistently overshared, and he described it in this really amazing way. He said, because I was like, oh, I don't know how to do it, like tell this person they're talking too much, it's really distracting, blah, blah, blah. And he said, what they do is emotional hijacking. where they come into a conversation and all of a sudden we're having like a productive conversation and then all of a sudden the whole attention switches onto one particular person and there's always drama. So there was the tendency to always have like really dramatic, emotionally like intense things going on. And so the level of drama plus the oversharing meant that it emotionally hijacked almost every conversation. And I was like, it was a light bulb moment for me because I'm like, oh, that's what's happening. That's why I'm feeling drained or whatever when I'm around that particular person. And just even understanding what was happening and the level of like, oh, okay, this is that dynamic. And then it led to conversations being able to be had around how do you manage that oversharing? And if you are that person, how can you moderate some of your own behavior? Mm. But also if you're experiencing that, so be it the dramatist or the oversharer or the other type of energy drainer, the pessimist or the cynic, how can you hold up a mirror and help people see? Now, the mirror might be you or the mirror might be helping someone else see that and go, okay, cool. Well, what is the antidote to that behavior? And so obviously the antidote to like pessimism is optimism, and that doesn't mean blind optimism or toxic positivity.
Correct.
But it does mean that we have this ability to go, okay, instead of jumping straight to negative, because negative is more of a the negative emotions that like draw people in more quickly. How do we move towards, okay, yeah, there might be some downsides to this particular situation, but how might we make it better? Or how might we see the opportunity rather than the obstacle?
Yeah, rather than focusing on what's wrong, how can we look at what we can do to make it better? Yeah. And like sometimes it's okay to acknowledge, yeah, look, that's solved. But okay, what next? Yeah, the emotional hijacking, it's tricky, but again, it's putting boundaries in place and having a, you know, quiet, polite chat with someone, you know, not publicly shaming them for it and just going, hey, look, you might not be aware. I get sometimes you've got to share what's going on in your life, but it's also detracting a bit from the team or just, you know, as frequently as you share, it might be a bit difficult. And as you were talking, it made me think that sometimes people deal with that just by, you know, popping the headphones on and turning their back. And I've been into work environments where everyone's sort of locked into their screens and not socializing. So you get this sort of flip side where you don't have a place where people do talk and share. But it might be more about having blocks of time where it's okay to talk and be distracted and then going, yep. And most of us now are on our headsets because that's just the nature of work and open plan offices and the rest. But not doing it as a rude gesture of just going, yep, okay, don't have time to continue on the conversation. Now just got to turn around and focus on work. So at least acknowledging them and then being able to get that time that you might need to have that focus.
I know Atlassian have this tool, the personal user manual. Have you ever heard of that?
No. I mean, I've looked through some of Atlassian's tools, but no, not this one. Tell us.
I did it actually in a workshop last week with a team. It's so helpful, and you can go search it online. I'll find a link. It's in the show notes about where you can find how to do this with your team. But essentially, it's trying to set up how do we set some boundaries before it gets to the critical moment. So often what we do is we only deal with these issues when we have the problem. But if we knew in advance, okay, what drains my energy? What re-energizes me? What things do I need to work well? For example, like for you, if your thing is I do deep work and I need headphones on and no distractions. And if you tell your team that in your personal user manual, then your team know how you like to work. And so then you're able to avoid, or you're kind of setting boundaries before you need them desperately, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Look, and so whilst I haven't heard of it being called the personal user manual, definitely done that with a team that I worked with, and it worked beautifully. We were a team of mental health professionals, so we knew that we were going to have times where we needed each other, because you can't talk about that sort of work outside your team because that's all your confidentiality, privacy side of things. But we put together, I guess, our user manual, right? We're like, when I feel stressed, this is what I need. And for each of us, it was varying levels of human interaction. And we also used to joke that we were ready for a rupture because we'd been getting along so well for so long as a really tight team that we're like, surely our time's up. Like, surely we're due soon. And I think at one point a few of us got sick, you know, spread the cold around the office, which was lovely. And it just meant then that was sort of not our complete rupture, but, you know, one of the team members was like, yep, tapping into that bit where I told you I just need time away. And so they were able to go do that, spend a bit of time without, because we would eat meals together. We were very ingrained in each other's day-to-day. And yet we knew. We were like, yeah, cool, she told us about this a couple of months ago, so we're not as concerned had she just suddenly retreated with no notice. Like, we just were like, yep, this was already, she'd front-loaded us. We knew what to expect, and that's cool. We know she'll come back to us in a few days and be right, which it was. We're still quite amazed that we never quite had the rupture that we were banking on. It was a lucky team. But, yeah, having that conversation up front, all right, what are our stress signals? And then when we display them, how do we want to be treated?
I love that. What are our stress signals? What other questions would you ask in that, if you were in going through that discovery phase with the team to work out, okay, how could we work best together?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot.
I am.
I love it. Yeah. So I guess, yeah, knowing where your stresses lie, but I suppose, and I guess part of sharing this with the team is also making sure you've got a level of insight. I think that's the key thing for making you consciously aware of going, like, you know, you do those things, but saying them out loud is a very different way of acknowledging it. And it's perhaps also some of the things that you know that you're not so good at doing. It could be, look, I'm not great at asking for help. So that way it's inviting people to let you know perhaps when you should, sooner than you would ask. Or you could be someone that asks for help at the drop of a hat, and that, you know, people need to push back on you a little bit to find the solutions. So it just could be some of those types of things about how your work preferences, you know, what's your work routine? What does that look like? Because I guess I get most of my productive work done first thing in the morning. Post lunch is when I like to have a little bit of movement, social time. So when I was part of a larger team, it was not unusual for me to have lunch and then walk around all the different team areas. And it took a while for people to go, she's not here, she's not management checking on us. She's just here because she is going for a wander, and that's what she does around this time of day. So it was great for me to stretch my legs and have a human interaction with people. But that was sort of my work pattern. So once people knew that that was my normal, then it was like, cool, they would just expect, they would get outputs, better outputs from me in the morning, and that, you know, it was better off in the afternoon to maybe have meetings or things like that. So it was, and look, not everyone's the same, but if you can work that out amongst you and go, well, actually, then maybe we organise our meetings later in the day rather than first up, because most of us will get in, just do the deep work. We're more focused, we're more rested, and then we can set aside time for meetings, as opposed to having a meeting first up and then not having that same momentum for the rest of the day. So I think all those sorts of things of what's the common ground for a team and where do you need to have a bit of give, sets everyone up to just have a more enjoyable time of it.
Yeah, and I think, like, it almost becomes like a team playbook. So
yeah.
I feel like if you wanted to run this with your team, if you're listening, you're like, oh, this is really cool, how could I get my team to do something like this? Maybe you can put together a list of questions you can run in a team meeting. So I love that, stress signals. What are the stress signals? I think that's such a good question. I love that. I think also, what are your healthy signals? Like, what do you look like when you're in the healthy zone? And then, and because a lot of us, we know what we look like when we're in like high stress, but sometimes we don't know what we look like when we're in the healthy zone.
I love that as an add-on of, let's actually focus on the positive as well and not just keep on going, how do we get rid of the negative?
It's
good.
And then, like, what drains my energy? What re-energizes me? So what behaviors drain your energy? So is it like when someone talks too much? Is it when someone interrupts you when you're in deep work? Is it pessimism? Is it the cynic kind of behavior? Is it drama? A lot of those will drain most people, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But being able to list out what things drain your energy and then what things energize you, like the types of work, as you mentioned, with routine. For me, I like doing creative work at night. I'm much more creative after the kids have gone to bed.
Yeah.
So figuring that out as a team and going, cool, how do we then play to our strengths and notice in one another when we're moving into that stress zone and out of that healthy zone. That can be such a helpful tool. So try, if you want to write those down, and then you could get your manager, get your team together and run that as a group, and it would be so insightful and set you up for not having the rupture, as you mentioned.
And I guess in doing those sorts of chats means that you're starting to increase that trust that you've got within your team. And I love that at the moment there's such a keen interest in psychological risk at work. And so this is one of those areas where we're creating safety. We're having these discussions and you know, this could be one of those team discussions of, yeah, what are your stress signals? What are your healthy signals? Another sort of thing I love doing to help create some shared understanding is around values alignment. And there's a whole bunch, and I'm sure you've got a whole selection of different things that you would work with teams as well, of creating a sense of safety that it's okay to share when we're stressed. We can then be more open to receiving feedback, to talking about career changes, and having those more transparent workplaces. So I think that's what all these questions are sort of leading to, is how do we create a more transparent workplace where we feel secure, safe to be ourselves, and therefore more productive.
Yes, you're so right there. That's that link, isn't it, of like transparency and feeling safe to be honest.
Yeah, I think I mentioned I'm pinching on Adam Grant. It's also Amy Edmondson is sort of what's on in the car when I'm driving between places, is listening to her audiobook at the moment, but various things there. So that's sort of where I'm like going, having all these wonderful yes moments and wishing I could drive and write things down in the car of having some different ideas. But I think the more we can do that and support people in how to have, as you mentioned, the challenging conversation piece and handle those with a bit of grace. You could just wave a magic wand and make the workplace better. That'd be great.
I think the thing as well with any difficult workplace conversation, especially when you're having it upwards and you are trying to talk to your boss about something and you feel that sense of like maybe fear or anxiety around it, acknowledge in your opening line, in the start of the conversation, if you acknowledge what you're feeling, you actually set the tone for the whole conversation. So if I was to come to you and you're my boss, Em, and you would have already set a beautifully psychologically safe workplace because this is what you do all day with
your
business.
Hopefully, that's what I'm going for, yeah.
But let's say I'm relatively new, I'm still getting to know you, and so I'm not sure how maybe you'll respond. I would come to you and say, hey, Em, I want to talk to you about my future in the organization, and I just want to raise a couple of thoughts that I've had, but I'll just be really honest. I feel a little bit nervous to put this out there. And so I just want to be open and honest with you. It's really important that we have transparency, but I'm feeling a bit apprehensive. Is it okay that I just kind of go there and have this chat with you?
Yeah, and I would just be like, oh, I love that you've just told me how you're feeling. So that would be a big tick for me. But I guess as the manager, then you'd want to acknowledge that back and go, yeah, I can understand and appreciate why these sorts of conversations are challenging. And I know you're new to us. So, let's just gently take it and see how we go. And if you start to feel more comfortable in what you want to share with me, because I recognize that you might not want to share everything. And I guess usually, I do open up conversations with that, giving people permission to only share what they're comfortable with. And that means that they'll just go as far as they want to on that occasion. If that test, dipping your toes in, test the water. Does this feel safe? And it means that next time you can have a chat, you maybe go a little bit deeper. And it's just trying little things out. And I guess with each of the responses here, we're hoping for that ideal healthy workplace to be able to have these conversations. And I get that perhaps a lot of these questions are coming from places where people haven't got that trust yet. And so it's starting small, trying it out and going, okay, seeing what the response is. And I guess we also have a lot of leaders that are still adapting and learning new leadership styles. I think what is celebrated as effective leadership looks very different now than what it did at the start of my career. So people that have had different modelling of what good leadership looks like, which was much more directive type of leadership versus transformational, they're learning. So if they get that feedback, they can start to test how do they respond when people share those things with them. Maybe they're not used to people sharing feelings, and so they've got to get comfortable having those conversations. So I think we've got to recognise that just because someone's in a senior spot doesn't make them perfect, and they've got the opportunity to learn, and we can be part of that process, but we've got to be gentle and nurturing for each other and try and adjust that power dynamic a little bit.
And it is a really, really good call out. Test the waters. Like, if you don't know how they're going to respond, start small. Like, you've just so eloquently put there, M, of how people can kind of enter in and start seeing, okay, well, if this manager responds really well to this initial kind of vulnerable or raw conversation, it means that I can over time build up to those high stakes conversations where we talk about, would like the example of talking about the parental leave stuff in a small business and maybe needing to look for other work, because that is a really high stakes kind of discussion of talking to your employer about looking for other work before you've secured anything. So yes, test the waters, start small, move through and see, is the psychological safety here? And therefore, how can I show up and like start to have these really open, honest dialogues with employers? Because, you know, I think this stuff is so important and it weighs down on us so much.
Yeah. And it's not like psychological safety happens overnight either, right? It's not just that suddenly someone goes, right, I'm going to create a psychologically safe workplace. It has to be these smaller, gradual steps, these little changes that then everyone's testing the waters, everyone's just adapting, and then it starts to grow. And it's a staged process of different levels of psychological safety that we can work on. We're not trying to jump too far too quickly. We've just got to gradually grow it step by step.
Perfect. I think that's so many good insights, and that common thread of how do we be more transparent at work. There have been some awesome questions. We didn't get through all of them. There were so many, but we will park it there. I just want to say, Em, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. People are going to want to connect with you. You're an organizational psychologist. You're the founder of Grit Consultancy. How do people find out more about you?
Oh, so jump in on LinkedIn. So, yep, Emily Douglas on LinkedIn. That's probably the easiest way to get hold of me. And I'm more than happy for connections and, getting to know people, helping them out in their work.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. It's been so good to have these three episodes. If you didn't listen to the toxic workplace one, go back. We also talked about burnout. Both of those conversations have gotten a huge response. If you've enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, give us a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple. It helps us get the pod out there, which means we can keep making more of these. Thanks so much for hanging out.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast.
Before you do anything meaningful with your money, you need to be able to control your money. I can help. The Glen James Spending Plan is a complete spending plan budgeting system that will show you how to manage your money. It includes a downloadable spreadsheet that will tell you how much to put into what account each week, and you will get control over your money within 2 pay cycles. Thousands of people have used the Glen James Spending Plan and it is now free. So download the Glen James Spending Plan and enroll today.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.